So, hello everybody. First, I would like to thank organizers, particularly me here, to organize this really wonderful workshop and to give me opportunity to present our recent work. Okay, I think yesterday I really experienced a very stimulating session about, you know, several sessions about ytterbium titanate. In last slide, I decided to change my presentation slightly. I would like to add a section to also present our recent study about ytterbium titanate in the polycrystalline format. Okay, then of course I will give some about classical. Basically it's mixed classical and quantum. The first part I will give some introduction about this, but I think probably, you know, after 1.5 day this can be skipped because everybody is really knows about this. Okay, before I talk, I would like to really mention many co-workers and collaborators for this two project. Okay, first, oops, this is, where's that? Maybe I just get you. Okay, so these are three students are now working with me. I think Vivian, so this ytterbium titanate project basically is part of her PhD project. I also would like to particularly thank Mihir and Jeff for the collaboration on the Monte Carlo simulation of the classical dipolar spin ice. Okay, of course, I would like to thank Vary Group for, you know, produce this wonderful single crystal and powder samples for us, and many other colleagues who are really working at a different neutron facility to help us to set up the experiment. First part, I would like to just give you some very brief introduction, you know, how the spin ice, what is aspect related to spin ice from classical to quantum. So basically, there is a huge success regarding the dipolar spin ice physics. This is a very simple Hamiltonian. So you have this exchange term, also this dipolar term, but of course in the different forms of this dipolar spin ice model, you can this up to, you know, second or third years labor. So basically with this model, you can realize the so-called, you know, this emergent state. This is a monopole state, and also now pave the way to study this slow spin dynamics, which is basically now it's governed by, I think it's governed by monopole dynamics. For instance, I give example about, okay, for instance, for the holmium titanate, I think this is a Bruce data, so you can really see the system is more or less low temperature, more or less frozen, so you could not really observe any, you know, spin excitations beyond the instrument resolution. For instance, here is about like 2 microEV. So, okay, nowadays, so this slow dynamics, basically, it's, you know, there are different models describe this, but more or less you could see following this monopole dynamics line, which you can give, let's say, at least in large region, a very good description about this physics. And of course, there are 2 clouds around. First, of course, is you know, this famous paper about this absence of Pauling entropy in thermally equilibrated dispersion titanate, because they observe the heat capacity basically at low temperature, which really goes up. Then you lost the Pauling entropy. Of course, this could be seen as indication of some possible, let's say, new ground state or some things. Of course, this another one is, of course, is following some completely in different avenues to explain this this physics about this, you know, for instance, this huge hump, its heat capacity, think that ever since it's not about monopole, it's really, it's a supercooled spin liquid. These are 2 very contrasting physical pictures, okay? Then, of course, you heard about or read a lot, basically, you could introduce this transverse terms, okay? This transverse term, of course, is 2 bound direction dependent transverse terms. You can basically introduce strong quantum dynamics in this thing. For instance, we have talked about a lot about the ytterbium titanate in the real material. Like ytterbium and the pristine basis particle compound are really strong candidate for the quantum spin ice. I just give you some picture. Basically, this energy landscape for the quantum spin ice, you should, okay, predicted is you should see a photon, gapless photon excitation, then you should see V zones. Of course, there are different terms to define what is that, and you would sort of see this magnetic monopole, which is mainly governed by this strong icing term. And of course, if you go from classical to quantum regime, so you should say basically this pinch point melting, okay? And you should see, of course, in elastic neutron scattering, you should see some emergency artificial photons. These are very nice, okay, prediction, I think still an Artimoto target for many experimentalists, including many neutron scatterers, okay. This, I would say, is a landmark paper, because this paper is by Kate and Bruce group. They really measured the ytterbium titanate for the first time. They really experimentally determined this very strong transverse exchange terms. Okay, so nowadays, of course, there are many. Yesterday, you also heard about Radu presented his study about this. Okay, I'm not going to repeat. So basically, for the quantum spin ice candidate, you could say it's very different from classical spin ice like holmium titanate and what I showed. You should see very extended excitations in both Q and omega region. Okay, so there are many examples. So now let's really shift to, okay, I think you already hear about a lot of story about the ytterbium titanate. I think now the common understanding is we will agree that the different samples can exist. They are very interesting. I think worth to, you know, be studied carefully. Okay, here I would like to present, of course, a different set of sample from our study, which is basically polyclinic sample. In this sample, we have clearly observed, determined a quasi-collinear ferromagnetic structure. We also observed clean gapped magnetic excitations. Okay, the whole story about this is why there's such a strong sample dependence, because one of the prominent theories also provided by Ludwig is, you know, basically because in this phase space, this system is sitting really in a region where you have many competing waters, so therefore it's really sensitive to, let's say, stoichiometry or other small perturbations. And okay, I would just like to remind, in 2012, in a collaboration with Dr. Chiang, so we basically studied one single crystal grown by Yasui's group. Okay, from this single crystal, you could observe clearly a ferromagnetic peak and a hiss loop of this transition. So basically indicate this is a fourth order ferromagnetic transition from magnetic Coulomb liquid to a ferromagnet. Okay, that is so far it's only single crystal in the world. Okay, I don't know Radu's crystal, but shows, I just want to give you a remind about this. Okay, now I want to show our powder study, of course, in order to convince the community. We have studied the neutron powder diffraction extensively. Okay, based on our refinement, you could see we really see the off-stoichiometry of this sample is really minimized, okay? It's really comparable to Kate's sample. The best sample from Kate, I think, is really comparable. And, okay, so this is just the magnetic neutron scattering. So we made this subtraction of low-temperature data from the high-temperature data. You observe this clear magnetic peak. Then we could really refine this structure with basically, okay, it's like this split ferromagnetic structure, but with a very, very small split angle, which is nearly, that's what we call nearly a quasi-collinear ferromagnetic structure. You have the magnetic moment really nearly parallel to this four-fold symmetry axis. And of course, we're trying to determine this water pyramid. First part, you can see from neutron diffraction, we follow the intensity of function temperature or different magnetic reflection. It just shows an abrupt jump at this phase transition. We also measure heat capacity. You can see the huge jump here. This is a big peak. And this is neutron depolarization. Just basically, this is a very good measure for the formation of the ferromagnetic domains. You can see from all the water pyramids we could access, we're showing this is a clear phase transition into a ferromagnetic water with water moment, as I showing already in the previous slide, okay, 0.87 millibar. Of course, this, I would like to remind you, this is much, much smaller than both from the free ytterbium ions, 3 plus ions, and crystal field magnetic moment. Okay, this is just our recent data I would like to share with you, okay? At 300 millik, you could see the typical behavior as shown yesterday by Anana. So you get a huge amount of bunch of continual excitation, you know? So it's basically not so continual because they are well structured. At low temperature, you could see there are clear excitation gaps formed at the Brillouin zone centers, which basically, of course, it's an possible indication for this ferromagnetic water state, okay? What we did so far is we're using linear spin wave theory to simulate the powder averaged the spin wave excitation spectrum based on these two sets of parameters, from the Kate, from the also Rado's group, you could say, okay, from Kate's, this band is far too high than ours. Okay, I think the Rado's pyramid is really close to ours, but nonetheless, you could say it's still not quite matching to that, okay? What I would like to mention, of course, is the failure of the linear spin wave theory based on the low-end parameter to describe this system, mainly because the system, you can see, we have really a bunch of these strong structured continuum excitations. Of course, now the question is, if this is too Magnum scattering, or this is a real signature of fractionalization, okay? I think this feature basically can goes to way above transition. I would tend to think this is really caused by the signature of quantum dynamics in this system, because way above the ferromagnetic transition, there is no spin wave forms, okay? Yes, that's so far. For this story, idea is, you know, as we said, it's not an argument. This is the best sample I ever trying to convince you. What I'm trying to say is this sample, we paid, you know, effort to say this is a really off stoichiometry minimized sample, okay? I think maybe your sample is better, maybe it's really stoichiometry, but nonetheless, I think this is God's gift. If we can see such a beautifully long-range water state, that's good, let's study, okay? Now, I really come back to, you know, from quantum to classic. I hope I still have some time, yeah? Okay, this is really a story, I think, also is hanging around in community for quite some time. Although I already mentioned in the introduction part, many that's really struggled by this heat capacity normally, you know, rising up. And the main reason for that is, I think, the David Pomansky, what he measured basically is really trying to handle this extremely slow thermal relaxation time. You can see that if you are falling into 450, 300, this is really incredibly long. So if you take into account, you found the integral heat capacity basically is going up, okay? So that's why I also would like to say, without taking into account this slow dynamics, the frozen dynamics in the spin ice, this long-range water state basically is already a long time ago predicted by Roger Mocha. And of course, recently, there is a renewed interest about the ground state of the system. You can say, okay, the proposal can be this chain-based water, also this competing water, and the refrustration. Also, they found also that this is a vortex group found this intermediate magnetization state and the competing water. But I want to also say in these pictures, this competing water is really one very important gradient, just similar to the case in the ytterbium tetanet, because these parameters are really in the phase space, put the system near a phase boundary to fuel, you know, energy degenerate state. Okay, for instance, water in the Calabri, basically, from all the different models, you could, I think a few important messages. Now the community we are going this first, you really need to consider this further labor exchange interaction to properly describe this ground state, okay, like J2, J3, okay? And also, the competing water seems a really general feature for the dipolar spin ice, okay? Regarding to dispersion, because again, the ground state is a dipole octable. Of course, naturally, the question would arise is whether any quantum effect, just like Liouville says, could arise up from that, okay? So, okay, for instance, I give an example about this estimation of quantum effect. This is by Jeff Rao, okay? He gave this, basically, this is just this loop exchange term. This is 2 milligram. If you take this as 1K by Patrick Henry-News, okay, it's even smaller. Okay, it's by Pau, you get like 70 millik. This could stabilize quantum system. But I would like to see what the scale basically tells you it's infeasible in a real experimental case. You could have any quantum effect in the dipolar spin ice. Really, this is too small energy scale. Okay. I think many years ago, Tom and Steve Bromwell have did many beautiful work on this dispersion totinate. You know, the main challenge for neutron scattering is because this sample is strongly absorbing. Of course, what we try to do is take into account this argument about off stoichiometry or the sample. We try to reproduce a sample which, let's say, has optimal condition to reduce this oxygen defect. This one sample is grow, let's say, in the flowing oxygen atmosphere in a 2 bar. Okay, we're trying to make sure the oxygen stoichiometry is nice. But of course, how to prove this is we really spend effort to do this Hart-Lutyens single crystal diffraction refinement. We collected 296 reflections, okay, on a 200 milligram Bach crystal. So you can see, okay, if we take into account absorption correction, so we really significantly reduce the R factors, okay? So we, this is really see that that is a, it's a, it's a huge effort. We used this modify this Cambridge crystallography subrouting library to make the correction for the absorption, because even this sample is isotope enriched sample but still contains about 6% of lateral dispersion. Absorption cross section still pretty strong. Okay, with the refinement, you can see the beauty of the system is because there are different types of isotopes. You could really exactly, let's say, because they have very different contrasted scattering lengths. You could really determine how much, for instance, dispersal 162 you have, how much lateral dispersal you have. Titanium oxygen, you could see these are just matching ideally occupancy, and titanium oxygen are also for both oxygen sides, you see, is nearly stoichiometric. Okay, so there we're pretty confident this is a really genuine, I think, a single crystal with minimized off stoichiometry. We never claim this is the best crystal, but it's really minimized off, off stoichiometry. This is our measurement on the heat capacity. You can see I trying to just using diamonds paper combine all this known heat capacity data together. This black line, thick line, is the heat capacity of on this isotope crystal. Basically, you would say it's matching very nicely to, you know, for instance, other isotope crystal from Clamp, also from a normal crystal from Kadowski. Okay, you can see this crystal also shows all proper behaviors, like let's say low and proper dispersible single crystals. Having prepared like this, then we studied, of course, polarized neutron scattering. Okay, today this is not the main focus of my talk, but I really appreciate Jeff and Mihir did. Usually, I just show some example. For instance, this is a spin flip, long spin scattering total. So we have really using played with, I just said, this table of this parameters. Basically, is matching quite nicely with, for instance, this is generalized dipolar spin ice model. Okay, I'm saying this is beyond scope for today's talk. What I mainly would like to talk to, of course, what could be the real ground state of the dispersion of titanate. I would like to see, okay, we will carefully measure the pinch point, okay? Because the pinch point supposedly is a profound, let's say, defining feature of the magnetic Coulomb phase. For instance, what we measured is like at about this nice spin ice regime, 900 millik. This is at a 470 millik after long time cooling, okay? To make sure the sample is thermoequilibrate. I just put this triangle here, so you could really see there's something significantly changed, okay? To quantify such change is not an easy job, okay? What I'm trying to say, okay, I used a very simple approach, okay? Basically, what I did is I just trying to make a cut here, okay? Then I fit a pick ways. Then I follow to the same position. Then I make the linear extrapolation of the peak width exactly to this pinch point, okay? Then what you get basically is this picture here, okay? This is a width of the pinch point. Basically, okay, I just say this is really preliminary data I want to show you. Basically, you could see there are three really typical regimes, okay? One region basically is about 1K. You could see this pinch point width by the method which I use to measure, which really has a finite width, okay? This tells, because here you have high monopole density, so you have a lot of monopoles, a lot bound together, okay? Not bound by Dirac strings. I would like to call this a defective monopole topological phase. But then in this 1K region to, you know, 800 millik, we see the maximum, this heat capacity humps. So you see this ideal monopole topological phase. Because in this phase, in using my method, you could see the pinch point width is zero. That means all monopoles are bound together by Dirac strings, okay? Then at a lower temperature, you really see, they start to see the pinch points melting, okay? They are become negative. Become negative means these two parts of a triangle are falling away. Okay, I would really like to know what actually is that, because it's possible new multiple tablet you face, or it's just indication of is some precursor phase to the real ground state phase of the dispersion tantalate. Because based on a leak and Owens serial, okay, in the quantum spin eyes, you should see the similar phenomenology like exactly what I see. But as I already introduced in the beginning, I don't believe this dispersion tantalate has strong enough quantum effect to drive the system into a quantum spin state, okay? So therefore the question is, what could be the cause of this? Then we did the inelastic neutron scattering.
Where is your resolution limit for the pinch point width?
The main problem is because when you measure this diffuse scattering, your pinch point width are always convoluted, not just with in-plane resolution, also with out-plane. It's really for me, okay, I think it might be possible to do that, but at the moment, I just use in this simple way, okay? What the idea you could see, okay, in the region one, basically, you could direct measure pinch point width because anyway the width is finite. But as soon as you're cooling down to this spin ice phase, the ideal monopole topological phase is no longer, because this in serial, the pinch point has no width. Okay, therefore you have to find a way how to do that. But because instrument resolution, you always got to some intensity convoluted in this region. Thomason did that in his paper, okay, I would say what he got is pinch point width is much, much longer than what we have. Because,
I guess what I was wondering, so the two points that you have that have negative pinch point width,
yes.
can you see that they're different if you look at the
okay,
data?
So you see this? Here is really a very nicely pinch point, okay? This region, but here you can see this move up. But of course, if you make a simple cut here, you still would see a little intensity. That's because instrument resolution convolution, okay? Okay, to understand whether any quantum effect exists in this system, we did this in last neutron scattering at this cold neutron spectrometer at IM5. Okay, what I want to see here is, of course, this is elastic cut, okay? So you can see a huge amount of magnetic excitations, but most magnetic excitations are static. But if we move out the energy cut, I want to see in this configuration, the energy resolution is less than 20 micro EV, okay? When you move out, then you can see there's a clear feature which somehow still remained in this SQ omega map, okay? But this most static feature is cut out. Therefore, okay, I would like to say, of course, if you move further away, like 30 microwave, absolutely no signal from this cut. I just want to say the indication exists. I really would like to see, this is something which is really close to features, these are boundary features. I want to say these are kind of indication. There is an extended quasi-elastic component with energy transfer up to 20 micro EV. Okay, this is the statement moment I could make, okay? This is 470 millikelvin. Based on our experiences of temperature point, we still could manage to make sample equilibrated, thermal equilibrated. We don't go much lower, I would like to see, since there's no enough quantum dynamics, so what drives the melting of pinch point? This is due to competing orders. Of course, this has to be done next. Now, I would like to give just some very simple message. Okay, first, I would like to say, on the set of sample, which we are working on the ytterbium titanate, we have observed a clear defined quasi collinear ferromagnetic structure ferromagnetic phase. Also, we also found below phase transition there is a very rich featured, including the gap to magnetic excitation and some continuum excitations too. And I also like to see that for this classic dipole spin ice, we have really played. I could not really show this work to play with various dipole spin ice model to tweak with exchange parameter. That is done. Okay, just it's out of scope. Okay, I would want to see the evidence of possible melting of pinch point. Of course, the reason for that is not due to quantum dynamics, okay? I would like to see the competing worlds as fast switching are possibly behind it. At the end, I would like to thank you for your attention. So this is in a Munich reactor. I just want to say it's beautiful. Yes, okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Questions?
Tom? So do any of these dipolar spinach models fit to produce a heat capacity at turn?
Hmm? Sorry?
Do any of these dipolar spinach models that fit to produce a heat capacity at turn?
Heat capacity?
Yeah.
So in let's say above this minimum, okay? It's let's go back to here. The heat capacity. I think this measure, you know, there's any theory can produce this part very nicely, of course. So I think also without considering this slow dynamics, I would say both generalized dipolar spin ice model and this distorted dipolar spin ice model can work shows upturning, okay? But of course, experimentally to access that, that is a very different story. The point is you don't have access to that, it's too slow.
In the models, we were unable to reconcile the Newton scattering and the specific heat without introducing some model of disorder. That was the conclusion of our work. So, without quantum dynamics and without disorder, we couldn't explain all thermodynamic data, including the rise of specific heat at that temperature.
Yuan? So is it possible in neutron scattering to directly see whether the sample is in thermal equilibrium or not?
It's a very, very good question, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's very, very difficult, okay? We could only, let's say, based on appearance, okay? Since we measure a lot about this kind of system at low temperature, based on appearance, we trying to have kind of the waiting time, okay? That's why you see I always limited to something like 450 above, you know, because we know below you really get very long time. At the moment I really cannot answer you. I think it's possible, but we mostly based on experience, not direct let's indications so far, okay.
Can I have two questions? One is for this present diagram. I'm a little bit confused because there are many experimental data showing different low temperature behavior. So
you mean heat capacity, right?
Yeah, specific heat.
Right.
So what's the difference in the measurement scheme?
I think except the first three and this Monte Carlo, we are done with pretty standard heat capacity measurement. For instance,
Monte Carlo is fine.
I know. The first three, because David Pomansky, he developed his own method to take care of this slow dynamic. I just say everything is the same. Either commercial system, PPMS, or you have developed something which is commercially like, okay? So I don't think there's any difference, but that means I could say you measure basically this double tau relaxation curve. You don't wait too long, okay? If the system could not thermalize, this you just bypass to next temperature point. That's why you missed out this.
I think maybe Yan or David can correct me, but I think some of these samples are powders and some are single crystals.
Yes, there are powders, there are single crystals, yes.
Paper
yes.
Was also
yes.
There's some sample technique and some.
But I think if you do the measurement over with the same characteristic time scale, there's no difference between them, or essentially no difference. Right? It's only if you wait long enough to.
We measure standard. The point is, this is did by commercial PPMS system. We really it's so difficult to modify their measurement protocol. You know, if you want to wait long, I know it's doable, but we simply just we know anyway. We cannot equilibrate that.
Isn't
we just
a statement competing with Yan is making a statement that the standard measurements is in accord with standard other measurements. Okay. That's the statement.
Okay. So then next question is on the equilibrium dynamics. So I think you claim that there's a gap excitation from your result, but
yeah.
What is the
This is a gap here.
Uh,
These are just spin wave, linear spin wave calculation. We use this Lowen parameters, we put into this linear spin wave program, we just make powder average to calculate.
Yeah, I mean, the two lower components are actually the calculation.
Yes, these are just, this experimental data. We just want to see, okay, the experimental data we have seen here, you know, really doesn't match to any of the Lowen, let's say, parameters. There are still, you know, but I would say the Rados parameter, you know, seems at least these features are really put down much than the kits, you know.
It seems that there's some feature around q near equal to 1.
Exactly. This I call this bunched continuum excitation. Okay. Here.
Below the 0.1 milli.
0.1. You mean
with
experiment? Yeah, exactly. That's why this is a very silent feature. I could already say this is a general feature here. It's very small gap. Yes.
Can you tell me which Q vector?
This is a zone center of 111 bright peak. Okay.
So raw data or background
subtracted? Raw data. I also exactly want to say this is really a beauty of the time of flight based backscattering spectrometers. You're using, you know, since you are not direct facing incoming beam, you have extremely low background. You really get access to this small SQ omega region where you would like to see these features in different from time of flight. This backscattering is done at ISIS, really. It's a beautiful, beautiful instrument.
So there's no background subtraction?
No background subtraction, yes.
Nick?
So I don't really want to disagree with you, but I think I want to play devil's advocate. So we know two ways of killing pinch points.
Okay.
You can have a quantum system and you can cool them down and they wash out.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can excite monopoles, in which case they kind of get crushed from the sides because you go from an algebraic to an exponential decay at long.
Or you could order.
Exactly.
I haven't forgotten.
That's sort of, yeah.
So if it's the quantum corrections, you expect the pinch point to wash out as you cool down. If it's exciting monopoles thermally, you expect the pinch point to get crushed as you come up in temperature. If it orders, you expect bright peaks, which fill in the pinch point, in fact. So of these three alternatives, without commenting on the energy scales, your data looks most like the first.
Quantum.
So you've got the pinch point, which is washing out as you go down.
I would love to believe that, you know, I really. But let's say, yes, yeah, you know, this. Because the energy scale, that's the, okay.
These are the three ways.
You know, that's what we mentioned here. Okay, of course, you are expert, maybe you could. But this energy scale. Yes, this energy scale, really, you just see whatever you do, it's too small. Because it's 470 milli-K, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, more or less like you can see below one Kelvin, you start to see slow melting of quench point, okay. That energy scale, you look at this ring exchange terms, which is just 2-3 orders magnitude larger, for instance, like that. I don't know how that could be possible.
Okay, so to be precise about ours, that was a statement about the ground state, not about the properties of finite temperature. And it's a quantum Monte Carlo bound on the amount of tunneling you need to destroy order at zero temperature. That's a different question from what you need to get quantum effects at finite temperature, which might be measurable. So I'm not sure that you're comparing the same thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to claim there's a big quantum effect in this system. I just want to be precise about what that 70 millikelvin would
mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To rephrase what Nick is saying is that they, as I said, you know, its bounds are on destruction of the ground state based on their QMC, whereas our bound was more on heuristic based on estimates of what should be the super exchange couplings.
Mm-hmm.
So there's room, there's lots of room here. Well, some room.
So maybe it's asked, but about how much heat is being imparted on the sample when you're doing the measurement? You have an idea?
You mean a neutron measurement?
Yeah, the neutron. How much is being absorbed?
Okay. I cannot really tell you a hard number, but let's imagine the heating source in such kind of experimental setup, okay? With the neutrons, we have gammas, okay? Because when you choose example, you have a EZ gamma. This gamma ray would be a heating source. I think this is usually in less than milliwatt nanojoule, okay? And there are other sources, of course, is, I mean, since we measure polarized neutrons, we need to put a field. Field is about 10 Gauss range. Again, this is in the nanojoule range. I would think if you put the wall together, I mean, it's, you know, significantly less than macrojoule, okay? Heat loading. Our cooling power of this dilution, that's exactly, you have to comparing how water cooling power. I could only argue those effects are secondary, okay? So the sample basically can be kept continuously in cooling status until it reaches the outer equilibrium.
Okay, so what I wanted to just say is that, you know, for this long time constant state, you know, when we're looking at the heat being released, one aspect is that it's very slow. Mm-hmm. The other one is the amount of heat that can be actually released when it's trying to equilibrate becomes very small.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see that it's fractions of a nanowatt of heat is being coming out of the system as it equilibrates.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're putting in more heat than nanowatts, then you'll probably heat the state up, is what I'm concerned about. Now, our sample is a lot smaller than yours, so you have to scale it up.
Yeah, I fully reckon that, yes. That is really issue we need to also take in care of. But this is basically, it's common for a neutron experiment. Yes, I very, very reckon that.
Okay, so maybe if you have questions. So I think two very quick questions and quick answers.
Mm.
So this the spectra you have, the theoretical spectra for ytterbium titanate, why do these look so sort of qualitatively different here, like this splitting at low Q?
Wait, which one?
These look quite different at low Q.
The split band there.
As in the Radu's model, this isotope, which is a factor 3, less than the J plus minus term. I think that's the main reason you push this band much lower, you know, to These are two bands there anyway. It's there, okay. Just you know, this term I think would say it just pushed down a lot because that is much smaller. This is factor 3 larger than J minus 1. This is factor 3 less than J plus minus.
Okay, Bruce, last question.
So you probably said this, but what was TC for your powder sample?
TC, oh yes, okay. So you can see here, which is slightly less, that is about 270 millik range, yeah.
Okay, we're gonna wrap it up here and thank you, Yitzhak, we'll stop.
Mm-hmm.